Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2013 film Side Effects, directed by Steven Soderbergh. We are Drew-less this evening because he has family duties.
We are without Drew. We're not Drew-less.
Okay, we are
sans Brother Drew.
Yes. You're Drew deficient. So Brother Jay, had you ever seen this movie?
Never.
Okay, and you watched it for the first time tonight.
I just finished it 5 minutes ago.
Sweet. And did boyfriend Jesse watch it too?
He did.
Okay. So I want to play this one a little bit differently than we normally do by saying, since this is sort of a thriller movie, let's not talk about the ending right away. We'll give you a spoiler update later if you haven't seen the movie. But let's just start off with this. Would you recommend this movie to our listeners?
I think so. I think it's worth watching.
It's isn't it?
In spite of the fact that it has Channing Tatum in it.
Oh, yeah. It's a thriller, but I found the thriller part of it less interesting than the kind of discussion about the overarching discussion.
Well, my closing comment at the end of the movie, which isn't giving anything away, but at the end of the movie, she moves to Sweden and starts being a detective.
There we go. Yeah. I don't actually get that, but.
The girl with the dragon tattoo?
It's Rooney Mara.
Yes.
The main character of the story. So, yeah. I guess, spoiler, she lives. But, yeah. No.
That's not really a spoiler, is it?
No, not really. How would you describe this movie?
It is kind of a suspense drama, a medical suspense drama.
Yeah. I mean, much like Contagion, which is also a Soderbergh film.
This is much better than Contagion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's still pretty deliberately paced.
Yeah, but I didn't get the impression, unlike Contagion, which I could predict many parts of Contagion and thought parts of Contagion were so painfully slow. I never felt that with this movie. I just flowed. I kept moving. I didn't feel bored. To me, watching it, I didn't feel like anything could have been cut out of this movie.
Yeah, not really.
I mean, all of it was pretty essential to the story or didn't take away from the story. There wasn't anything that could have been cut. It was very lean as far as that.
Yeah. And let's see, it didn't make a whole lot of money. I think budget was $30 million and it made 32. So it probably didn't actually make its money back when you consider advertising. Although I didn't see any advertising for this movie, so God knows.
I didn't know about it until you guys had mentioned it, and then I bought a used Blu-ray copy at the local used DVD shop, DVD/music shop, Everyday Music.
Yeah, so shall we just dive in?
I asked boyfriend Jesse. I will reveal boyfriend Jesse's comment at the end because he references that this reminded him a lot of another movie we just watched recently. And I think just mentioning the other movie would give it away.
Okay. Was it a positive? Did he like it?
His comment, I'm not entirely sure. Hang on one second. I should have been prepared better. And
no, come on. Why buck tradition?
Yeah, why? Why indeed? I'm sorry. So what was your question again?
Oh, should we just dive into it?
Yeah.
Okay. So the movie opens. And by the way, Steven Soderbergh knows how to direct a movie.
It's very pretty. It was a gorgeous movie.
Yeah, lots of interesting things. Like, it opens and ends with this basically the same scene where you crash into and then you crash out of or zoom into.
Similar types.
Yeah, a very distinct building style. But we start the movie with an opening shot that shows bloodstains. And we don't know what has happened, where, or to whom. By the way, this plot synopsis I get mostly from IMDb. I edit it quite a bit because the person who... Sometimes the plot synopsises are have lots of editorial comments in them, so I just want to get the basic plot in the right order. So we have Emily Taylor, played by Rooney Mara, who we know from Kubo and the Two Strings, The Social Network, and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo remake, and her husband Martin, played by Channing Tatum, who we know from Magic Mike and Hail Caesar.
I have not seen either.
I have not seen Magic Mike. Hail Caesar is actually pretty good. It's kind of a satire set in the, 30s? And it's a, or maybe 40s. And it is a Coen Brothers movie. So if you understand that to begin with, if you're in for that, you'll have a good time. If you're not, meh.
Are you a big Coen Brothers fan?
I think so. Yeah, I know Drew turns out not to be, but I think I am. I mean, I like Oh Brother, and I haven't seen Inside Llewellyn Davis, but I pretty much like everything else I can think of from them recently. But anyway, so Martin Channing Tatum has served a 4-year prison sentence for insider trading. He's about to be released, and Emily, Rooney Mara again, is a very... She's waifish, and she's very sympathetic. Would you agree?
Yes. She seems...
She seems kind of fragile.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we know people like Emily.
Yeah, she's very familiar. Like, I can identify her as people I know in real life.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she's a little mousy, and she seems to be... I mean, obviously, she has been wealthy at some point in her life, but she also has this thing of a husband who's getting out of jail. And she has a job, and her boss is very supportive. Apparently, she's decent at what she does. But her boss, Polly Draper, from 30-something... has been very supportive of her and gives her time off when she needs to, blah, blah, blah. But we see her visit her husband in jail and then pick up her husband when he is released from jail. And Martin's mother, Ann Dowd, from the Manchurian Candidate, is there at the jail to pick him up. Now, they retire to their middle-class home, where they make sweet, sweet love. But she's not all that into it, and he may not be all that into it, or... capable or whatever. So it was sort of an awkward re-encounter. And he starts talking about how he met this guy in jail who was in for tax fraud, and they're going to have this great scheme and get all that money back that they lost when he went to jail in the first place.
Yeah, she seems fairly dejected and disconnected. And the more he's talking about going right back to the thing that you think probably got him there in the first place, the more it appears that she disconnects from him.
Yeah, she is very emotionally detached.
Or she's disconnecting from reality. It's hard to tell which, or both.
We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the beauty of the performance, is she's coming a little unhinged, but we're not sure how. Unhinged with him, unhinged with reality, unhinged, you know, that's the kind of the good misdirection this movie has going.
Oh, yeah. And she does that well. So she goes down to the parking garage for her car, and she drops her handbag and then picks it up and then gets her car, and then she seems to just stop, and then she drives her car headlong into a brick wall. And then we flash forward to a local hospital where we meet Jonathan Banks, played by Jude Law, who we know from The Talented Mr. Ripley, Contagion, Road to Perdition, and Gattaca, all the movies we have covered, even though he's been in many, many more movies.
He's been in tons of movies.
And it turns out...
I really like him.
I was going to say, I am a big Jude Law fan.
Yeah.
It's worth pointing out that the trivia on this movie says that he was actually kind of nervous to be the leading male, the leading man role or whatever. It's not leading male. This is like his first leading man role.
Really?
Yeah. And it's also the first role where he doesn't have really much makeup, and he gets his own hairline still, like his natural hairline, and his own accent as well.
Huh. Oh, that must be very refreshing.
Yeah. So he is in a hospital.
He's been in a shit ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's quality goods. But anyway, so he's trying to calm down a police officer.
The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Which I have not seen yet.
Oh, it's a great movie.
So he's trying to calm down a police officer who has been manhandling a patient. The patient only speaks French and is freaking out. And so the doctor speaks to the patient in French and then calmly describes to the police officer that, hey, he's all upset because he saw his father, his dead father, driving a cab. And the officer's like, well, then he's crazy. And Jude Law is like, no, not necessarily. It's cultural. In Haiti, they often sometimes see their dead relatives after they pass. And it's part of the grief process. To which my notes say, what? Followed by, ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla, bing-bang.
Did you see that I posted that on Facebook today?
No, uh-uh.
Oh.
The Witch Doctor song?
It's things to moan during sex.
That's so funny. So, yeah.
So it's odd that you brought it up, so... And I just made it awkward, now, so I'm glad I could do that.
We, you and I have skated around the edges of the medical field. Does this seem like some bullshit to you?
Which part?
The Haitian, it's okay, he's not psychotic, he's just seeing his dead relatives.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know a lot of Haitian religious spiritual guys, and since... Haiti tends to be, you know, witch doctors and voodoo. I wouldn't put it past somebody from Haiti claiming that they had seen a dead relative.
Yeah, but would I question the doctor's judgment?
Oh, saying, you mean the doctor justifying it?
Yeah, it's like, nah, buddy, don't worry about it. We're gonna let him out just in a couple minutes. Just
oh no, a doctor's in America, we'd be like, he batshit crazy. He's not going anywhere.
Exactly. There may be a cultural reason for it, but he's gonna spend a little time in the hospital. Yeah,
he's gonna have some alone time.
Yeah,
yeah.
So anyway,
the doctor seems right off.
Maybe the doctor isn't the best doctor.
Incredibly dismissive.
Yeah,
but I think the movie's trying to make him into. Kind of almost a wunderkind.
Or maybe he thinks he's a better doctor than he actually is.
Also possibly true.
Okay. Or maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I just thought that even the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, wait, hold on. This is taking a turn. So his next patient is Emily Taylor, who's got some minor head trauma. And he goes in to give her a psych eval. And she's kind of unfocused. And he says that, oh, by the way, the insurance company is not going to cover you because there's no skin marks. You ran into a brick wall.
Oops.
She wants to just go home. He's like, that doesn't seem like a very good idea. But she is both persuasive and, again, sympathetic. So he agrees to bend the rules a little bit and say, oh, okay, we can let you go home, but you have to come and see me.
And I would submit if we roped in Dr. Wonders to this conversation, he would submit that any doctor paying malpractice insurance, not likely to release a patient like this.
Well, exactly. I'm just
guessing. Now, I don't know.
I mean, I know that if we really get it deep down into it, there is generally a shortage of psychiatric beds anywhere. So maybe she would be a candidate if she's going back to her family, blah, blah, blah. But especially when we find out that this is not her first attempt. But
yeah.
Anyway, so the doctor says, okay, you have to come see me, but I'll release you to your mom and your husband. So he tells the mom and the husband, here, I put her on some antidepressant medications and she's going to check in with me. But, you know, just keep an eye on her. So then Emily goes back to work, and she ends up running to the bathroom immediately to vomit. And her boss comes in to check on her and sees that she's taking this new medication. And her boss is like, oh, I took this before. It made me throw up too. Maybe you should try this other thing that I've been on. Which,
so, does she work on some kind of like ad agency or something?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
Okay. I couldn't quite tell.
She's in New York City, and we learn a little bit through the rest of the, as we learn more about her character, or at least the amount of her character that she wants us to know, that she moved to New York to, for some sort of art job. So that would make sense. Ad agency makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. But again, this is where I think this is a modern American tale where pretty much everybody in this movie is on anxiety or depression meds or meds of some kind. And we can go and talk about, you know, all sorts of things. Like, this is a conversation. This is a movie, when you look at that aspect of this film, where the conversation can go wildly all over the place. Because, of course, all these meds have different side effects, which is what the movie's called, side effects. And these meds work in a greater or lesser, they work better or worse each individual patient.
Yeah, everybody's biochemistry, body chemistry, and brain chemistry is uniquely different. In some ways profoundly, in some ways not so profoundly. So the same medication may not have the same psychoactive effect in the same in two adjacent patients.
So it's not unusual, if you get prescribed a medication like this, to actually go through a couple of medications until you find one that where you balance the reward versus the side effects.
Correct. I mean, there's many of the antidepressants, depending on what kind, because there's lots of different kinds now, they have their own side effects, of course, but they have sometimes great benefit. And so the trade-off is the side effect worth it? Some older antidepressants, they don't even use as antidepressants anymore. They use specifically for the side effects.
Oh, sure.
Like Vistaril or hydroxyzine. It was a tricyclic antidepressant, but it, because of the side effects, it causes drowsiness and sedation. So they don't. No, it just calms people down. Hydroxyzine just chills people out.
I thought so, the tricyclics cause things like tremors.
Some of them can, but not hydroxyzine. Vistaril is really, it just makes you sleepy.
Okay.
And it will, and it's kind of, it'll dry you out, it'll decongest you. Make you stop itching. And so usually if somebody's having problems sleeping, they'll put you on hydroxyzine because it's cheap. It works really well to knock your ass out, and there's really no other side effect because that is the side effect of the drug. Oh. And if it gives you a little mental boost in your depression, then that's just a benefit.
Anyway, so she's put on this antidepressants, and she goes back to work and she's throwing up. And her boss suggests basically everybody in this movie suggests a different medication for her. And she ends up running through a series of depressants, but none of them really seem to work. And so Jonathan contacts her former psychiatrist in Connecticut, Dr. Victoria Siebert, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones from Chicago and Entrapment, who suggests that Jonathan put Emily on a new drug called Ablixa. It's funny because they actually use real brand name drugs until they come up to Ablixa. And right. Then there's one more that they made up just for this movie.
Deluxe or whatever.
Yeah. So, anyway, Victoria said that Emily felt invisible towards her father and that she felt abandoned again when Martin went to jail. So, it's better that she's seeing a male psychologist at this time. And, oh, by the way, Ablixa might work.
And we never see any of her family ever.
Nope. She also mentions that Emily had a miscarriage that she hadn't told Jonathan about. Emily hadn't told Jonathan, the doctor, about this miscarriage. So the notes say that Jonathan is reluctant to put Emily on the experimental drug.
I didn't really get that impression that he was all that resistant.
Yeah, so let's move on a little bit. So, okay, so meanwhile, Emily and Martin, Rooney Mara and Channing Tatum, go to a music concert.
A music concert?
Some sort of event. Hold on.
They were on a boat.
No, this wasn't the boat, was it? This was just a party?
they are on a boat with all the people that he used to be in business with.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that's going to set him up.
His old friend. But he tells him, oh, yeah, but don't mention my new guy in Dubai to these old people that we knew.
Yeah. And so she gets on the boat and she's like, no, I'm fine. And then she starts to break down a little bit. And then she ends up running to the head of the boat.
Yes. In a very dramatic scene that embarrasses herself and maybe her husband.
I expected her to throw herself off the boat onto a floating door.
Exactly. Or do a Spalding Gray and just jump off the boat and disappear.
He was just swimming to Cambodia.
Crickets. So, later...
Oh, come on!
No, actually, crickets is a swimming to Cambodia joke.
I see.
When you see when you watch Swimming to Cambodia someday. Anyway, so Emily ends up... later, we see her on a subway platform. And she's considering jumping, but a
very vigilant and proactive, responsive law enforcement officer
prevents her from jumping. Which, by the way, in England, they have computers that, you know, because everything is NVIDIA in London. It's like the most surveilled city.
CCTV, yeah.
So they have actually computers that look for jerky movements and movements that would indicate people are about to jump in front of trains. Because that's one way, you know, anytime you have an exposed subway platform, which is pretty much every subway platform in the world, I think.
Every tube station.
Yeah, you can just jump in front of a train. It's not hard to do, and it pretty much works. Actually, people get pushed off into the trains as well, so that's a little scary. So
I say if you watch a certain Netflix show.
That's true. Although, let me tell you, I love subways. Maybe it's because I haven't had to rely on them for transportation. I've just used them on vacation. But, Paris, London, I love the subways.
I would submit that maybe perhaps outside of the United States, they're a little bit better. The ones I've ridden in the United States are... I mean, I haven't been out of the United States, so I can't speak to them, but the ones I've had experience with don't give me warm fuzzies, so.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm sure if I had to use them every day, but if the difference is trying to go to tourist places or try to go wide differences in a big city, it's easier to grab a train than it is to get a car, find a parking place or cab.
Well, also, you're not going to get lost on a train.
True.
Hopefully.
Mostly, yeah. So we have the whole scene, and we have the subway thing. We cut away to Jonathan and his wife, Deidre, played by Vanessa Shaw from Eyes Wide Shut. Jonathan is giving her a beta blocker before she goes on a job interview. Everybody takes them.
Yeah, beta blockers are just blood pressure medication.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But they also, I mean, because I was on beta blockers for a little bit, and it may have just been.
They suppress your adrenal response.
Yeah, yeah. They totally took away my starter response, mm-hmm. which for anxiety is a huge thing.
Yeah, because once you get adrenalized, you lose control.
Yeah, well, and it starts, for me, you know.
The chain reaction.
The whole panic attack. When the adrenaline starts, it's like, here we go. But yeah, if you lose that starter response, it's actually pretty freeing.
I think our mother would say that she's a safer driver on beta blockers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think people are, you know, I mean, there's something to be said. Although, again, like everything, there's a trade-off. The gentleman who is our former and our now our current president's personal doctor, who was up for the job of VA director, was no longer. He had one of those issues where. One of the things he was criticized for was being too much of a Dr. Feelgood.
Did he finally withdraw?
I think so, yeah.
Oh.
I could be wrong, but if by the time anybody hears this, I'm sure he will have been withdrawn. Because there's like three different layers of reasons why he shouldn't do that job. One of them, though, is that it kind of exposed the whole, you give everybody sleeping pills, and then you give everybody... either like beta blockers or what's the like Provigil or something? Is that a like basically they'll give you the uppers for the daytime and the downers for the nighttime, and it's just a cycle, and it's a very military thing. So the fact that he was an admiral in the Navy is, you know.
He did indeed withdraw.
Yeah, well, it's good for him. As his boss suggested, he doesn't need this. He's too good a person to be torn down.
But he only hires the best people.
Anyway, his binder's full of women. Okay, so,
You probably haven't seen Miss Dr. Wonder's latest Facebook post. It made me giggle out loud, probably more than it should have. It was almost like an Onion headline. Oh, it is an Onion headline indeed. See, I knew what it was just by seeing it. Bill Cosby feeling disoriented after jury slips conviction into his verdict.
I love that. Yes. I love the detail that he was pretty stoic when they read the verdict of guilty. But as soon as the prosecutor said, we move that he be jailed right away because we think he's a flight risk, the Dr. Cosby screamed or yelled at asshole in court, which I thought was pretty funny.
Did he really?
Yes.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
who am I to say?
Yeah.
I mean, just because he's guilty doesn't mean the other guy's not an asshole. I mean,
well,
but he happens to be the right asshole.
Yeah.
And also the victor asshole. So,
well, yeah. It's like, oh, come on. Is it what it would do? Anyway,
what can you do? Go to jail.
Well, not yet. He's out on bail yet. Okay, so back to the movie. So after she tries to jump in front of the train, Jonathan puts her on Ablixa. And the medication works great. It's fantastic. It solves all her problems. She is passionate in her lovemaking now. Here, her husband even says that, hey, whoever invented that pill is going to become rich. This is the kind of life he wants. She's happy. She's horny. It's a good deal. There's just one little problem. She has these occasional sleepwalking episodes.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. So later, Banks and his two business partners, played by Layla Robbins from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and Peter Friedman, they're having lunch with a drug rep. Who's praising this new medicine, Delatrex, and wants Jonathan to start doing trials on his patients. Hires him, like, what, 50 grand a year or something?
Well, 50 grand for the study.
Ah, okay. To basically record data and get subjects to take medication. Now, Jonathan, again, we don't know the morality. I mean, he seems to be a decent doctor, maybe a little overconfident in my estimation.
I don't know. See, at this point, I'm kind of like, he is doing all kinds of things.
Bad things, you mean?
Well, it's hard to tell, but from my perspective, because I mean, I don't work in the same setting, but I work around medical professionals. So when you see, and I'm not speaking about anybody in my organization because there's nobody in my organization that has quite the same functions as this. But
well,
I will
first
say
of all, the opinions expressed are those of only the brothers Anderson and do not reflect the friends, family, and certainly the professions that we work in.
Absolutely. But in my experience, even as just a private citizen, when you have a physician or clinician who is working at a hospital, because that's income. They also have a private practice on top of that. And now they're taking studies on top of their practice. That's a lot of diversity. And it just seems like a really large volume for one person to be maintaining their portfolio. You know, if you have a big client load already,
so you're not concerned about the ethics. You're more just concerned about how he's overextending him. So.
Well, ethics is a completely different conversation because if you want my opinion of drug reps alone, I can tell you we throw them out.
Yeah. Yeah. Drug reps have had much more limited scope than they did 10 years ago.
Well, they also, there's a lot more laws in place now. Yeah. They can't do it, the crap that they used to do. Yeah. Because it just amounted to basically bribery, payola. But so if you talk to some of my professional friends, they will tell you that I used to work with a pharmacist at a, anytime the drug reps would come, he would just be like, get out of the store and don't come back. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you. Go away. Cause sometimes they're obnoxious. Every now and then, where I'm different, when I worked there, we would have a drug rep that would.
How about the one place I used to work way back when? We're going to be vague on these things.
But what have you. But we had a drug rep that came in and like gave us education on insulin and brought us lunch. That's okay. They weren't trying to sell us anything. They were just trying to help us do our job. And they actually were getting paid by the insurance companies who wanted us to basically make sure that the patients weren't getting either over or undercharged, getting too much insulin or not enough insulin. So that was a helpful thing. But 99% of the drug reps coming in are just trying to get you to somehow influence the patient, which we wouldn't do.
I've seen countless times in doctor's offices where
samples.
Yeah, the drug rep comes in with their whole suitcase full of samples and lots of swag, like pens and stethoscopes and bags, and also pays for lunch. So the office is already picking the restaurant and calling in the order that the drug rep is picking up on the way over there. And, oh yeah. And then, I mean, in some cases they will take, fly doctors to conventions and all sorts of stuff. Anyway. So
Yeah. None of that. That doesn't exist. I'm glad that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And samples are, yeah. Retail world, we used to hate people who got samples because they would come in and they would want, well, I had this sample, and so my doctor said I could pick up my prescription here. You could, but your insurance won't pay for it. Would you like to pay cash? Yeah. How much is it? $1,100.
Yeah, exactly.
For a year? For a month?
Yeah, this bottle that you want. Yeah.
This teeny tiny little bottle, $1,100. Yeah. Well, it doesn't cost that much. Like, you got to talk to Pfizer or whoever. Well,
And then, fuck you, Pfizer. You can go to the Pfizer website where you can get a coupon that you can take to the doctor's or the pharmacy, and you will pay a $25 copay, depending on what the actual fine print of the thing says.
Yes.
But that actually does not, it seems like it's helpful to the patient, and maybe it is, but it's not helpful to the world.
Nope.
It's bad. It's just the worst. It's everything's manipulating everything, and now there's so much manipulation going on. Oh, anyway, we could go on, but that's not what this movie is about. They touch on a little bit when he meets with the drug rep with his partner. I guess he has his own office, but he's got partners, and his two partners are too busy to take on this new study, but he's happy to do it. Well, and then we talk about the fact that because they can eat a very expensive meal, as long as they talk about business for 5 minutes, it's all covered. So anyway, everything seems to be going great. However, the sleepwalking is becoming to be a little bit of a problem.
That's a little troublesome.
Yeah. And so her husband, Martin, wants her to maybe stop the medication, but she's like, no, this medication is great. So Martin's going to go to his friend in prison. He visits him, and they're going to open an office in Houston. And then another patient of Jonathan's agrees to start the medication, Dexalant or whatever. But
the Dilexa, I think.
Oh, Dilexa. I'm sorry. Yeah. And anyway, so Emily ends up arriving at work late. Can't really explain why she's late. She's kind of out of it a little bit. Tells her that your performance, this can't happen again. Your performance is not great. So go home, get your shit together, come back later. So she goes home, she takes a pill, she's able to smile. Meantime, Deidre, Jonathan's wife, was not successful in her job interview. So she's being consoled by her husband. And then Martin comes home from his business meeting, and Emily is preparing a romantic dinner. But she seems a little out of it. We discover that, okay, maybe she's actually sleepwalking. And then she stabs her husband to death. All while sleepwalking.
It was
effective. And here's where we can, you know, look at real life a little bit. I did a little research in homicidal somnambulance. And let me tell you, as a defense in court, it is not a great one. There has been a couple of notable cases where, especially in like the 1800s, where people were acquitted, basically like an insanity defense. In modern times, it hasn't worked so well. Juries don't dig that defense. Plus now, with more CSI things on TV, it doesn't take as much for a prosecutor to say, to have a witness say, in the one case, this guy like killed his wife or some sort of family member. He thought he was sleepwalking, but at some point his dogs were like freaking out, but he like made some sort of motion to get the dogs to quiet down. And so they thought, well, he's not out of his mind or not in reality if he takes time out of his stabbing to quiet the dogs down. So he went to jail. Anyway. Yeah. So now we have a murder mystery. Well, not a mystery. We know who did it. We watched her.
Yeah.
But she, freaks out because she doesn't remember it happening. She calls the police and, she's all freaking out. And, we end up with, the district attorney, Michael Nathanson, and the detective, who are like, oh, geez. So the district attorney said, well, somebody's going to be punished in this. Either Emily, the stabber, or her doctor, the prescriber of the sleepwalking medication.
Somebody's going to emergency. Somebody's going to jail.
Yeah. So Jonathan, of course, he has. And here's where the other part of the story where I'm going to throw a little bit of a flag. It seems like he was involved in her treatment way longer than he should have been, even legally. Like, maybe at this point, if you're treating a woman who then stabs somebody to death, and she, her defense is that the medication you prescribed caused it, maybe you shouldn't continue to be her doctor.
Yeah, it would seem like a huge conflict of interest. Not to mention a whole bunch of medical review boards.
Yeah. But anyway, again, this is a movie. It's not real life. So, Jonathan is fighting for her acquittal. Victoria, Catherine Zeta-Jones, does tell Jonathan that he really couldn't have done anything else. I mean, he's not, you know, it's just a sad situation. Sorry. Emily's lawyer produces a bunch of cases where the accused was acquitted because of the sleepwalking defense. So we have this push and pull where Emily is being charged with murder, and Jonathan is doing his best to, A, help out his patient, but also, B, not get in trouble himself. And so shit is starting to fall apart. And it's kind of a big case. Very juicy. And of course, you know, the Oblixa people, they're cutting their losses. Their reporters show up at the house, so it's putting a strain on Jonathan's marriage. His other patients kind of are acting weird around him because he's the doctor of the girl that stabbed her husband. And his own colleagues, his partners, straight up tell him they think that he's like totally negligent because of this workload that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, Jonathan's, you know, he has to explain why he takes on this huge workload. It's because his wife lost her job. Like, she didn't get the new job, which means she still doesn't have a job. So he has to pay all the bills. Eventually, Emily agrees to plead guilty to insanity. She's declared not guilty on the condition that she stays into medical institution until cleared by a psychiatrist. So that's a John Hinckley sort of thing. So
squeaky Frome.
Yeah, well. So Jonathan's career is crumbling, but he's trying to reassure his wife. But one of his partners brings up this thing that happened earlier in Jonathan's career.
Oops.
Yes.
A little Hugh Grant, perhaps.
Well, he was accused of having sex with a patient the patient was stalking him and she accused him of having sex with her, blah, blah, blah. His thing was like, oh no, this was not real. She was a psychotic, blah, blah, blah. So now his whole character is being questioned. Like maybe he's now misused another one of his patients. So me too. Time's up. He sets out to clear his name, and then he starts to dig up little inconsistencies in Emily's story. This is where I put in my notes, here comes Kaiser Sose. Because shit is not adding up with her story. And since everybody's kind of turning on him, like she's in a mental institution, basically, not guilty of murder, expecting to eventually be cured and released. His reputation is still crap. Oh, and because of all the scrutiny, his wife is less than completely pleased. And the fact that he's doing all this research to try to now he gets a hint maybe something's wrong. He does all this research and he starts acting like a crazy person himself, because now he's like a conspiracy theorist. Like maybe she was never pregnant. Maybe there weren't other suicide attempts. And then the thing about somebody saw her put on her seatbelt before she drove into the brick wall. And there was an ad, a video that ran in the lobby of her building that talked about the safety components of her, the car that she owned, and showed a crash test dummy driving into a wall and how safe the car was. So all these things are adding up, but you can also imagine him trying to do she's trying to tell his wife, see, she had this video and everything, and jet fuel can't melt steel beams. So,
oh God.
Yeah. So he looks a little bit like a kook.
Yeah. It almost looks like he's trying to justify his innocence by making sure that he amplifies the crazy.
And he's starting to do things like forget to pick up his child from school.
He's looking a little crazy.
Yeah. So is it maybe at this point where I'll suggest that I think this movie is worth watching. So from now on, this is a spoiler warning. If you want to go and watch this movie now, I'm not sure where you can see it, if you can see it for free or not. But if you can, or if you find it in a discount bin in your used DVD store, I say pick it up.
Yeah, I got it for $5.99.
Yeah, I thought this is a perfect $5.99 movie. And yeah. I was happy to watch it again. I might watch it again sometime. I mean, it's no Dune the miniseries, but it's way better than Dune the David Lynch movie.
I was gonna say our metric is now going to be Dune or 2001.
Well, as I told Dougie on Facebook, we need to revisit 2001 with all three of us. And we need to revisit Dr. Strangelove with all three of us as soon as possible, since Drew hasn't seen it.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely
There agree. Is no better time, especially once we all get done with the Dead Hand book. We can talk about Dead Hand and Dr. Strangelove at the same time.
Yeah, I might go.
That makes it funnier.
I might go listen to Dead Hand again. So
yeah, I'm going to start it soon and I will try to power through it.
I finished The Radium Girls, which was horrifying. So,
but good book.
A good book, but horrifying.
Since we're on a book tangent, I kind of want to reread the Michelle McNamara book now.
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Patton Oswalt's ex-wife. Because they finally arrested the original Night Stalker, Golden State rapist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, turns out he was a cop.
Yeah. Yeah, a cop who was fired from his job for shoplifting, a crowbar and dog repellent. By the way, he did some funky stuff with, like, pets and weird... I mean, the guy, this is a piece of work. By the way, Blaine Kapatch, comedian and friend of all of the people, wanted to point out on Twitter that... her name is pronounced Michelle McNamara, not Patton Oswalt's wife.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
She was Patton Oswalt's wife. It's great. But she was also more. She was her own person.
Yeah. But people like me don't recognize her name.
Of course.
I only recognize her, and not out of some kind of sexist misapprehension. It's just that I'm familiar with her name. If you told me it's Patton Oswalt's wife, I'd be like, oh, I know her. I know of her.
Exactly.
I'm bad with names because I haven't heard her name anywhere near as much as his. And she does deserve credit in her own right.
Well, and some of her notoriety and her ability to keep this hunt going for so long, because she can certainly, although she didn't, I don't think this guy that they arrested was necessarily on her short list of suspects. The fact that she kept pushing on this and kept digging and digging and digging, because she had her old, was it True Crime Diary blog, and she had a bunch of researchers working for her also, or with her also. She really kept this thing going, kept the ball rolling. And when the different law enforcement agencies announced the arrest, they kind of threw a little shade, I think. They didn't want to give her any credit. They spent a lot of time slapping each other's backs.
Isn't some of that embarrassment that they didn't break it really themselves?
I mean, I can kind of see that. Okay, so I don't think she handed them the smoking gun or anything.
Right, but she certainly amped up the pressure.
Exactly, yeah. So all of their hard work should be appreciated. Hopefully they'll get a conviction on this guy. But on the other hand, yeah, they wouldn't have kept digging into it probably.
Yeah, they should be lauded. They should be lauded for their accomplishment, but were it not for perhaps some extra pressure, it might not have been so expedient. If you can call expedient after this long.
Well, and you know, the one good thing about having all these researchers out there, you know, Michelle McNamara leading them probably, or one of the most, is that if nothing else, you get a lot of facts that you can, like, you collect information and you can discount it because you have looked through it. So if nothing else, if you're looking for a needle in a haystack, having more people look is better. So anyway.
Zodiac.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So sorry, back to the movie. Now we can talk about, I guess, spoilers. Yeah, I think we're going to have to spoil it, right? I mean, at this point, if you've seen the movie, you're listening now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth
it. Yeah, seriously, go watch it. I mean, go watch the movie and then come back.
Yeah.
Are you back? How was it? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Was it good?
So we have Jesse's twists.
Jesse's comment was, this movie was similar to Primal Fear.
Yep, I agree. It's a little bit like Primal Fear, because it turns out Rooney Mara's character thinks she's a criminal mastermind. Actually, it turns out, if I have a criticism of this movie, I think that Jude Law gets too much hero. Like, at the end of the movie, he has problem, gets all his revenge, and he ends up retaining his family and everything.
He's a terrible person, though.
Yeah, he's not great. He's not even a good doctor.
No.
So.
No, and he does some really unethical. I mean, you talk about ends justifying the means, but the ethics alone.
Oh, yeah.
Ethics and morals.
Well,
he really is.
At one point, he
really out on the fringe.
Because he is still the doctor on record keeping Emily in the hospital. So she basically has to jump through his hoops. He's the one who's going to say she's good to go. And since he now has figured out that maybe she is scamming everybody, because it turns out this movie is not about side effects as much as it's about manipulating the stock market. So the fact that her husband was an inside trader kind of comes back around. So I like that aspect of it. And she has, turns out, Catherine Zeta-Jones isn't the criminal mastermind behind the scenes, is just another pawn in Rooney Mara's plot. Manipulated by, it's like a honey trap, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So Rooney's playing everybody. But Jude Law still has the keys to keep her in jail. So he sets up a series of manipulations so that Catherine Zeta-Jones and Rooney Mara turn on each other and both admit to what's really going on. But yeah, the thing where he tells Rooney Mara he's putting true serum, he's injecting her with true serum and videotaping it.
That was a nice twist.
It was a nice twist. Completely unethical. And I love the other scene where he takes the evidence to the
DA.
District attorney, and he's like, no, burn this.
Yeah. You are rid of this.
This is a crime. This is going to bring you down completely. Doesn't matter if you're right or not.
Yeah.
You only have one, you know, one bite at the apple here.
Yeah. It's nice to prove you're right, but if you don't have a license, then that's some pretty shallow sandy ground to be standing on.
Yeah. Plus double jeopardy and all that. So.
Yeah.
So we end up as in a situation where turns out it's both a murder plot and a stock manipulation plot, and Rooney Mara decides to flip her allegiance from Catherine Zeta-Jones to Jude Law, and so she wears a wire and gets Catherine Zeta-Jones arrested, and she herself apparently is getting some sort of something.
Well, she can't be tried again.
Yeah, I suppose. So she's just going to go back to the hospital. But at this point, Jude Law, who is still her doctor.
Yeah, which seems inexplicable.
Yeah, and she can't fire him. And now she is actually being, because he's set up in a way that, again, this is a scary thing, which is why you don't pretend to be crazy and go into a mental hospital, because maybe you won't ever get out flying over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah, read the psychopath test.
Yeah, there you go. Now she is being drugged, and she's acting like a crazy person because she is sort of a crazy person.
Chemical restraint.
Yeah, so Jude Law ends up winning by being a horrible person. But
yeah, yeah, he is rewarded.
And so she's a prisoner in her own chemical restraints. And he has gotten his wife and stepchild back.
Were they married?
I don't know. Maybe girlfriend.
Or are they just shack ups?
I don't know.
I mean, he said he has a stepson, but...
Yeah, I think they were married.
It's amazing how she just forgives him, though.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and there's a whole setup we didn't talk about where Rooney Mara and Catherine Zeta-Jones had set up incriminating evidence to make it look like he had really molested her or had an inappropriate personal relationship with her.
Yeah.
Similar to the other allegation. So yeah, so shit is crumbling around. But yeah, at the end, turns out he wins. So it's an immorality tale. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's a fun story, but.
Yeah. Nobody comes out of this with clean hands.
Not even Channing Tatum, because he was a criminal.
Well, yeah. I also didn't mind seeing him get stabbed to death. So.
Yeah. He seems to be
he's fine. Yeah. He's a
song and dance guy. Watch Hail Caesar. You'll appreciate it.
Oh, I was going to say, I said, go watch Magic Mike.
Oh, I'm sure you'll appreciate that too. It's supposed to be good.
No. The funniest thing that ever happened was when I was working in one of the pharmacies, one of the pharmacists was talking about her teenage daughter, say, oh, I want to get this movie for my teenage daughter. She really likes, and we're talking about it, and I'm looking for it online, and I think it's called Magic Mike. We were all silent. What do you mean? What, for your teenage daughter? Like, she's how old? 19? Oh, she's like 13. And you want to get her what? Magic Mike? Are you sure you have the right movie? She goes on and on and on and on. Turns out she's talking about Michael Jordan.
Oh, that's so funny.
Not in any way the movie Magic Mike.
No.
And we were horrified. You should not buy your daughter Magic Mike, probably. That's probably going to end badly. I don't know. I mean, maybe your daughter will really enjoy it, but I don't think you'll get the Parent of the Year award. So,
anyway. So, your verdict?
I would give this a B. I mean, it's not a fantastic movie. It didn't blow me away. It did good enough that I was kind of guessing some of the twists, but the first twist the first twist I didn't see coming. After that, I kind of saw the pattern, which I think is inevitable. I think once you see the turn in this movie, then it's hard not to see the rest of it fall into place. But up until that turn, I had no idea where it was going. There's that point in the movie.
Hoping that it didn't end up with Jude Law being on top winning.
Well, when I watched it, you know, I was halfway, I think it's about halfway, and I was thinking, God, where are they going to go with this? Are they going to sue the drug companies? Is this going to be like a court procedural where they're suing the drug? And so that's what kind of I was expecting. I'd set myself up with that expectation. And then the movie just did a 180.
Yep. And so it turns out to be copycat.
Yeah, I appreciate it, kind of. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, me too.
Because, you know, often movies are not always able to, I'm not always able to suspend my brain long enough to just go with it. So that was a pleasant surprise. So, you know, it's definitely B. It's a good movie. I wouldn't go out of my way to spend a bunch of money to watch it. But for the $6 that I did spend, it was worthwhile for an evening watch. And I'll watch it again, likely, just to kind of see the things I didn't get. Also, because it is just a gorgeous movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so well
knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's so well shot, and the angles and the images, the colors were really, really stood out. There were some really good contrasts, so I really appreciated that. So.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it. Drew, was it worth it?
Oh dear.
Well, you're not going to win them all, so. Okay, so we're just going to have to go to 2 out of 3 on this one. As always, contrarian Drew. So, housekeeping?
If I see a sock puppet, I'm out of here, man.
Yeah, no sock puppets. I forgot all about the sock puppet. I forgot all those fun things from the early days.
How could you forget the sock puppet, for God's sakes?
We've evolved. Or we've moved away.
Have we really?
Okay, maybe not evolved. That's not the right word.
I was going to say I think you're giving, at least you're giving me far too much credit. I don't know how I've evolved.
That's so funny.
I'm more safely hidden in my incompetence by the fact that I have, you know, I am able to contribute a little less and get away with it. So
I don't know about that.
You know, blend into the background a little more.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's true at all. Actually, I only have really, I mean, I'm sure I can come up with stuff, but I only have really one piece of housekeeping that I wrote down. One of my bosses, who's great, she, let me tell you, don't go up against her for movie trivia. She can tell you like the year any movie has been released ever.
That's impressive.
It's an amazing feat. Anyway, but we were talking about how, I can't remember how it came up, but just like silly stuff that, you know, we think we're pretty smart. When she said either up until recently, or she always has a temptation, you know, whenever she like, encounters in the wild expensive deli meats, she's like afraid she's going to ask for, a prosciutto sandwich.
Huh?
It's I think it's a Italian, like non-smoked, very thinly sliced ham.
Oh,
prosciutto.
No.
just the idea of prosciutto makes me happy, so I'm never going to call it anything else again.
You.
Yeah. Oh, I know what we're talking about. We were talking about, it came up about people that were, that would overemphasize, foreign words, like Giada De Laurentiis, you know.
Mozzarella. Parmigiano.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, no, I it's...
Then we're going to take a handful of prosciutto, saute it nicely.
I wonder if Guy Fiero has some of that prosciutto. I can't even say it wrong.
Yeah. I want to say, I think his family name, like, until recently, was just, like, Fairy.
Yeah.
And so they ethnic'd it up a little bit. Not for the show, but just in the
family. I think he probably changed it so that he could... I always wonder when I see that if that isn't like a Screen Actors Guild thing where they change the name just so they can have a persona.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Because I see like Paul Hollywood and Mary Berry on that British baking show, and I'm are not their real names.
Yeah, well, yeah. Or... what, Jerry Rivers became Geraldo Rivera?
Well, Martin Sheen.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
You know, Mr. Estevez.
What was Manuel? What was his first name?
Oh, Martin Short. Martin Short.
No.
Oh my God.
It's a whole different. Yeah, that's not. I mean, that's not his real name either, is it?
I think it was Raul, wasn't it?
Oh, Raul maybe.
Raul Estevez.
Yeah.
I have the book.
Yeah, you have all the books. You have the Martin Sheen book too. You have the Martin Short book too.
Maybe Raul was his dad.
I know he had his sons Emilio and Carlos.
Ramon Gerard Antonio Estevez. See, now I'm overemphasizing.
Mozzarella.
Yeah, see. I wonder where I got Raul from. God only knows.
Fidel's brother. Oh, my friend Lena went to Cuba recently.
Did she?
Yeah.
Who did she fly on?
I don't know, but she did not enjoy it. In fact, they left 5 days early and came back with bed bugs.
Oh.
So she had the indignant. First of all, she said that where they were staying in Cuba was like old Havana or something. Mm-hmm. And everything was so expensive and everybody wanted like money for everything. Like every little bit of everything they did. People just wanted lots and lots of little bits of money, which turned out to make it being very expensive. And so they cut their trip like 5 days short. And then had to have the indignity of, she's like, this doesn't happen in my family.
Bed bugs is rough stuff, man.
It is rough stuff. It took her like six, eight months trying to avoid paying thousands of dollars for an exterminator until they ended up paying quite a bit for an exterminator.
Yeah, you got to put everything in a giant Ziploc airtight bag forever.
Well, actually, I think the way they do it now is they cook them. They heat up your house. Like 140 degrees for so many. It's like they pasteurize your house. There's all these, the horror stories would never end. It's like, you know, at first I just felt them. They were only biting me. They weren't even biting her boyfriend. And then she stopped sleeping in her bedroom. And the exterminator's like, yeah, that's great. But they work on a 7-day feeding cycle. So if there's no one sleeping in that bedroom in 7 days, they're going to start looking for better, more food. So they're going to go all over your house. She's like, oh. So.
Yeah, you can't avoid them. I mean, yeah. Oy, oy, oy.
Anyway, do you have housekeeping?
So I think I texted you and Drew. I know I texted Travis about West Cork.
Yeah. I've subscribed to it or bought it or whatever you have to. Well, it's free.
Yeah.
It's like a true crime.
It is. It's really a podcast basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Produced by Audible.
And it is, I listened to it in a single day.
Oh, excellent. So the whole thing, is it over now?
Yeah. It's 13 episodes.
Oh, okay. So is it about a town in Ireland?
Yes.
Okay. Is it part of the town Cork in County Cork?
West Cork.
Okay. A single murder mystery or?
Yeah, it's about one murder. Okay. It is in County Cork.
Does it have a satisfying conclusion?
I'm not sure how, I don't know how to answer that. I'm not.
Did they say that Patrick O'Malley did it?
Is that a joke?
It's just I could think of the most Irish name I could think of.
Oh, I see.
If Maggie O'Herlihy, did she do it?
It was that lazy girl that lays in the backyard patio furniture.
Yes.
it's hard to.
Okay,
I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, but it's entertaining throughout.
Oh yeah. It's okay. First of all, it's a true crime thing, which I like true crime things because I like things that actually happened and have some historic impact.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because I think in some ways it helps you. It keeps the memory of the victim alive in some ways. So I think that's a good thing. It's unfortunate that the person's been killed or murdered or died.
Do you find out who did it? That's the question.
Well, you think you know who did it.
Okay.
But it's never really resolved.
Okay, cool. Well, that's fine. I mean, that's fine. Did you listen to either Serial or Somebody Knows Something?
Not yet.
Okay. Serial, I found very disappointing because it didn't have a good conclusion.
Well, I don't know that this has a good conclusion either, but the story, there were enough different pieces to the story that you got a lot of different points of view. And so there were some fascinating episodes. Because each episode kind of took a little bit of a different tangent in some ways. So it was just odd. It was odd in parts and funny in parts and sad in parts. So, but because it obviously had a high production value for them. They put a lot of production value in it because they had creepy music a lot of the time and voice reverb and studio tricks. And so I had a hard time listening to it. The first episode I listened to, I said, ooh, I can't listen.
You can't listen to it as you're going to sleep.
I couldn't listen to it at night. It was creeping me out. And then I was listening to it the next morning at work. So I got like 20 minutes into the first episode. I'm like, oh, no, I can't. I have to go to bed and this will creep me out. So the next morning I started it and I was at work doing a bunch of, I do rebills for insurance and they are tedious and monotonous. And so it's just repetition with some occasional input. But not necessarily a lot of higher intellect, just a lot of, you know, if A does this, do B and then do C and then you get a rebill. So I spent all day doing that because I had like 100 to do. And so I listened to this all day during that to keep me kind of attentive. And I just tore through it.
Sweet.
I finished in a single day, but I had to stop a couple times because I'm like, oh, this is creepy and kind of spooky. Haunting is, I think, what I told Dr. Wonders. I'm like, this is haunting. It's good. It's really good. I really enjoyed it, but boy, it's haunting. So I would recommend it. If you like true crime, or you like mysteries, also if you really dig the Irish accents, it's kind of fascinating. Also quite a fair bit of French accents because the woman is Sophie Toscan du Plantier, who is murdered.
Ah, okay. And she's eating her prosciutto sandwich.
Yes.
Yes.
With her Guinness.
With her Guinness. Well, Guinness makes you strong. I saw it on billboards. So, anything else?
Let's see. Finish Radium Girls. That was really good. It's kind of graphic in parts, which is amazing because... And then I've got through Dune Messiah and Children of Dune. And now I wonder how far I am with, of course, Audible, which was just on. I am halfway through God Emperor of Dune.
Okay, cool.
And oh, do I have things to say.
Things that will be reflected in the movie?
No, because you won't see God Emperor of Dune, because that would be after Children of Dune.
Okay.
And there is no movie. Or series, I would submit at this point that that's probably a good thing.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
I'm halfway through. I clearly haven't read this one before because it's rough. It's like Frank Herbert was either needed a paycheck or these were the drinking years.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, probably maybe a little both, right?
I don't know. I haven't gotten to the end of it, so maybe that's not a fair... judgment on my part, but yeah, I don't know.
Is Paul still in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is he the God Emperor? All right. Okay, we'll talk. I don't want to have to, because again, I don't know where Children is going, so we'll see.
Yeah, when you're done with that, yeah. So when we're discussing Children of Dune, we will discuss God Emperor of Dune. Hopefully I will have gotten to
Yadorowski's Dune.
Well, I think, yeah, well, I'll get to that, but that's doesn't have anything to do with the books.
No, well, it doesn't have, yeah, it's more about the movie. It's more about him. It's
yeah.
It's interesting. When I first tried to watch that, by the way, and I kind of shut it off after the first 20-something minutes because he is a weirdo director.
It's hard to understand him.
A little bit. But once you get past that first part.
Yeah.
Have you seen it already yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Cool. So yeah. So you know. So you gotta get swept up in the fact that mm-hmm. it's got a vision.
Yeah. You gotta stick. If you stick with it, you will be rewarded.
Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to watch it again. Boyfriend Jesse has not seen it yet. When I started watching it the first time, he checked out after about the first time. He's like, I got something else.
All you have to do is see scenes from El Topo and you're like, no, done. Pass. Hard pass. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.